Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. I found a new source of information to use for this program. It's called Medical News Today. The first article I'll share makes a connection between exercise and glaucoma. You'll also hear about a heliotrope rash and about epiretinal membranes. New topics from a new source. The first article says exercise may protect you from glaucoma. It was written by Catherine Paddock, who's a PhD. It was fact-checked by Dr. Jasmine Collier. The article says, new research suggests that exercise, particularly moderate to vigorous intensity, such as brisk walking or jogging, may help to lower the risk of glaucoma, a leading cause of blindness. The team from the University of California, Los Angeles, that's commonly called UCLA, the team behind the new study presented their new findings at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Ophthalmology held recently in New Orleans, Louisiana. This article was published in the middle of November, so it's very current information. Using nationwide survey data collected in the United States, the researchers found that compared with the least active, the most physically active people appeared to have a 73% lower risk of developing glaucoma. Around 3 million people in the U.S. have glaucoma, which is a range of diseases that damage the eye's optic nerve and cause vision loss. The most common form, called open-angle glaucoma, increases pressure inside the eye. There is no cure for glaucoma, but if it's caught early, there are treatments. These include prescription eye drops that can slow its progression and preserve vision. Glaucoma is rising worldwide. And the headlines, that's what the headline says. The article says, worldwide glaucoma is the leading cause of irreversible blindness. Researchers have estimated that in 2013, worldwide, the number of people aged 40 to 80 with glaucoma was 64.3 million. This number is projected to rise to 111.8 million by the year 2040. Although glaucoma can affect anyone, there are certain groups with a higher risk of developing it. For example, in the U.S., it is more common in African Americans over the age of 40 and in all people age 60 and over who have a family history of the disease. It also is more common in people who have diabetes. People can help to reduce vision loss from glaucoma by controlling their blood pressure, keeping to a healthy weight, and being physically active. These things also help to prevent diabetes and other conditions that are linked to the higher risk for glaucoma. There has been a long-held view that lifestyle choices do not influence glaucoma itself. But this recent studies have shown a link between lifestyle factors and eye pressure, which is a significant risk factor for glaucoma. Tracking physical activity nationwide. Dr. Victoria Tseng, and that's spelled T-S-E-N-G, Dr. Victoria Tseng, one of the researchers behind this new study, notes that some studies have shown that exercise can alter blood flow to the eye and therefore the pressure inside it. So she and her colleagues decided to investigate the link between intensity of exercise and glaucoma using data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. This is abbreviated NHANES, N-H-A-N-E-S. The National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey has been tracking health and nutrition in children and adults in the U.S. since the 1960s. It is considered unique because participants undergo physical exams as well as interviews. In 2003, the survey began to use wearable devices called actigraph to monitor physical activity such as walking and jogging. Before then, information on physical activity was collected by interviewing. Faster walking matched lower glaucoma risk. For this new study, the researchers used walking speed and steps per minute to define the level of physical activity. They noted that 30 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity on at least 5 days of the week is equivalent to walking at least 7,000 steps per day every day of the week. When they analyzed the data, the team found a 6% reduction in the risk of developing glaucoma for every 10-unit increase in walking speed or steps per minute. I better repeat that for you. This is important information. When they analyzed the data, the team found a 6% reduction in the risk of developing glaucoma for every 10-unit increase in walking speed or increase in the number of steps per minute. They also found a 25% reduction in the risk of glaucoma for every 10-minute increase in the weekly amount of moderate to vigorous activity. Here's a quote from Dr. Victoria Tseng. She says, "Our research suggests that it is not only the act of exercising that may be associated with decreased glaucoma risk, but that people who exercise with higher speed and more steps in walking or running may even further decrease their glaucoma risk compared to people who exercise at lower speeds with fewer steps." However, the researchers do point out that other teams now need to look more robustly at the direct relationship between glaucoma and physical activity before any clinical guidelines on the findings can be formulated. Dr. Tseng says that in the meantime, she will be advising her patients to exercise because it will benefit their overall health, as well as possibly their eyes and their glaucoma. Stay tuned for more information on that one. Okay, the next topic we're going to cover, this comes from the same website called medicalnewstoday.com. They ask the question, what is a heliotrope rash? This was written by Zawn Villines, V-I-L-L-I-N-E-S. It was reduced by Dr. Nancy Carteron for medical accuracy. A heliotrope rash is a reddish-purple rash on or around the eyelids. The rash can look patchy and uneven, and it's often accompanied by a swollen eyelid. This rash, the heliotrope rash, occurs as the first noticeable symptom of an inflammatory muscle disease called dermatomyositis. The rash takes its name from the heliotrope flower, which has purple petals. Dermatomyositis causes progressive muscle weakness. In children, it can also damage the blood vessels. We're going to cover the causes and risk factors, some symptoms, the diagnosis, treatment, and also what kind of a takeaway you can have from this article. First section says, what are the causes and risk factors? This heliotrope rash, this is on the eyelids, on or around the eyelids, is characteristic of dermatomyositis. Dermatomyositis is part of a group of muscle diseases called inflammatory myopathies, or myositis, which means inflammation of the muscle. Dermatomyositis is a chronic auto-inflammatory disease with symptoms that may change over time. About a third of people who develop dermatomyositis as children recover, but the remainder continue to experience the symptoms. Researchers are unsure of what causes dermatomyositis. It may be due to an underlying genetic predisposition that is triggered by a bacteria, a virus, or maybe even by sunlight. Dermatomyositis is rare. It affects less than 10 out of every 1 million people. Women are twice as likely to get dermatomyositis as men. While it is possible to develop this condition at any age, it is more prevalent among children ages 5 to 10. Juvenile dermatomyositis affects children and can cause damage to the blood vessels as well as muscle weakness. Other risk factors for dermatomyositis, and I'm going to be spelling that for you in just a few minutes in case you want to jot it down. Other risk factors for dermatomyositis and the heliotrope rash that accompanies it include cancer, particularly in older people. And this is called the paraneoplastic syndrome. This is a risk factor. Another risk factor, autoimmune disorder or a predisposition to autoimmune diseases. Medications, infections, or injuries can also be a risk factor. A viral infection can start this going. Also, sunburn or heavy sun exposure might be a risk factor for dermatomyositis. And I will spell that for you. It's D-E-R-M-A-T-O. M-Y-O-S-I-T-I-S, dermatomyositis. You can hear the base word derma in there, which refers to skin. It's a skin rash. heliotrope rash. The symptoms. A heliotrope rash may be uneven and bumpy and often looks dry and irritated. It may burn or itch, or it may cause no symptoms other than reddened skin. In most people with dermatomyositis, a heliotrope rash appears before any of the muscular symptoms. Over time, other symptoms may appear, in addition to skin lesions or flaky spots on the elbows and knees, or a rash on the knuckles, other signs of dermatomyositis. There are some other ones too. We're going to list about 8 of them here for you. Progressively worsening muscle weakness, particularly in upper arms and upper thighs. Some people initially notice difficulty getting up from a seated position or have trouble combing their hair. A second sign, sudden muscle weakness in the hips, back, or shoulders. Swelling and redness around the fingernails. Hard lumps under the skin, which are due to calcium deposits under the skin. The fifth possible other symptom would be feelings of exhaustion and weakness. The next one, difficulty swallowing, including sensations of choking or having a lump in your throat. A hoarse voice that may accompany swallowing problems. And the final symptom, possibly, muscle pain, though not all people with dermatomyositis develop muscle pain. People with dermatomyositis may be more vulnerable to a lung disorder called interstitial lung disease. This disease damages lung tissue and can make it difficult to breathe. Some people with interstitial lung disease develop lung stiffness and weakness. The presence of specific antibodies in the blood may make it more likely that a person will develop interstitial lung disease. The next section is the diagnosis part and when you should see a doctor. It is not possible to self-diagnose dermatomyositis based solely on the presence of that rash. It can mimic some other conditions. Moreover, a rash on or around the eyes can pose a threat to vision, so it is vital to get an accurate diagnosis. People who develop a painful or itchy rash on your eyelids should see a doctor promptly, especially if your eyelids are swollen. If the eyelid is red or inflamed but not painful, it's probably okay to wait for 1 or 2 days. If the rash does not disappear, however, see a doctor. If an eyelid rash occurs along with other symptoms of dermatomyositis, ask a doctor for a referral to a special doctor, a specialist that usually would be a rheumatologist. Treatment may begin by ruling out other conditions such as pink eye, an allergic reaction, or an injury to the eyelid. Other disorders that may cause a rash on the eyelid could include lupus, HIV, or an inflammatory skin condition called lichen planus. Diagnosing dermatomyositis can be difficult, so it's important to work with a dermatologist. Some of the diagnostic tests may include the following 4 things: a blood test. These can detect enzymes and autoantibodies associated with dermatomyositis and other muscle or neurological disorders. Another possible test would be a biopsy. This would be an actual biopsy of the rash or of other irritated or inflamed areas of your skin. A biopsy removes a small sample of the tissue, which is then stained and examined under a microscope. You might also be asked to do some imaging tests, such as magnetic resonance imaging or an MRI of your muscles. These tests can show signs of muscle inflammation, even when a person has not yet experienced any muscle weakness. Another possible test would be a nerve conduction, an EMG or electromyogram. These can also show early signs of muscle weakness, but they do involve placing needles into the muscles, which can be a little painful. The treatment now for this disease, heliotrope rash, is one of the early symptoms. They say there is no cure for dermatomyositis, although symptoms may get better or may even go away on their own. The right treatment depends on the symptoms, the person's overall health, and the specific antibodies present in their blood. Some treatment options include the following 6 things, and some of them have side effects of their own, I'll warn you, namely corticosteroid drugs. Topical lotions can help with itching and other skin symptoms. Systemic corticosteroids may suppress the immune system and prevent dermatomyositis from getting worse. There's also a class of drugs called immunosuppressants. These are drugs that block activity in the immune system. Because dermatomyositis may be due to an overactive immune system, most people see an improvement in their symptoms. Immunosuppressants can put a person at risk for infections, however, so taking these drugs will depend on the person's overall health. Physical and exercise therapy. This can help resolve the symptoms by stimulating the affected area and maintaining a person's range of motion. Devices to support and assist the muscles. If the foot muscles become weak, a splint or a shoe insert may help. Another possible treatment would be heat therapy that can reduce inflammation in the muscles by increasing the blood flow to the muscles. There could also be some of those complementary therapies, such as massage, acupressure, or chiropractic treatment. This can help reduce the pain. So the takeaway from all of this, a heliotrope rash is in itself not dangerous, but it does point to a potentially serious underlying condition. Proper diagnosis can rule out cancer, which will need to be treated before dermatomyositis. Prompt treatment can improve outcomes in people with dermatomyositis, making it possible to lead a normal life with minimal muscle weakness. The next article is also from the same source that I mentioned, the new source, medicalnewstoday.com. All you need to know about epiretinal membranes. This is written by Lana Barham. It's reviewed by Dr. Anne Marie Griff. Epiretinal membranes are thin, transparent layers of fibrous tissues that form a film on the inner surface of the retina. Epiretinal membranes, it's also abbreviated ERM. ERMs are most often occur in people over the age of 50. According to the American Society of Retina Specialists, at least 2% of people over 50 years old, and 20% if you're over the age of 75, have these ERMs, but most do not need treatment. Up to 20% of people with epiretinal membranes have them in both eyes, but symptoms and severity for each eye differ. We're going to go over some symptoms, some risk factors and causes, diagnosis, treatment, and prevention, and then an outlook for ERMs. Fast facts on epiretinal membranes. ERMs usually cause a few mild symptoms. They are generally watched and not treated. In some instances, ERMs cause loss of vision and some visual distortion. And another fun fast fact is the only treatment for ERM is a surgical procedure called a vitrectomy. So now some symptoms for ERMs. These are severe when they affect the central part of the retina responsible for seeing fine details, for example, when reading or recognizing faces. In the severest cases, vision becomes blurred and distorted, similarly to a distorted view through an unadjusted pair of binoculars. Straight lines, such as those from a doorway, might appear wavy to people with ERM. ERM, epiretinal membrane vision loss, starts out unnoticeable and becomes increasingly severe. A person should report any of the following symptoms to their doctor or eye specialist. First of all, the symptom that you'd report, decreased vision or loss of central vision. And central vision allows the eyes to see ahead, to read or drive or see fine details. Another symptom you should report is any distorted or blurred vision, double vision, wavy vision, or problems reading small print. Those are pretty general descriptions to get to your eye doctor pronto. The next part of the article says, what are the risk factors and causes for ERMs? A person's risk of developing an ERM increases with age, and people with an existing eye or vision condition may develop an ERM even before the age of 50. Eye conditions that put a person at risk for developing an ERM are posterior vitreous detachment. This would be a separating of the gel that fills the back of the eye to the retina. Another person would be at risk with one who has a retinal tear or detachment. A retinal tear is a break in the retina, whereas a retinal detachment occurs when the retina pulls away from the back of the eye. Also, someone with injuries to the eye, eye injuries or traumas, can actually cause ERMs. If you've had surgery, eye surgeries, such as cataract surgery, can actually cause these epiretinal membranes, ERMs. Retinal vascular diseases, conditions affecting the blood vessels in the eye, such as diabetic retinopathy. And diabetic retinopathy can affect people with diabetes. Another risk factor would be any existing ERMs. Having an ERM in one eye means a higher likelihood of getting them in the other eye, too. Having any of these risk factors for ERMs does not guarantee that someone will develop this condition in one eye or both. Also, someone who does not have any risk factors could develop an ERM. Who gets these epiretinal membranes? According to the American Society of Retinal Specialists, men and women are equally affected by ERMs, but at least one medical journal disagrees with that. A research study reported in the journal BMJ Open finds that women are more often affected by ERMs than men. It is also possible that people of particular races are more affected by this condition than others. For example, the BMJ reported that 39% of people affected by this condition were of Chinese descent, 27.5% were Caucasian, a little over 26% were African, a little over 29% were Hispanic. Next, we come to the section about diagnosis. ERMs can be diagnosed during a routine vision exam. In many cases, vision is not affected. Most types of epiretinal membranes do not change and cause vision symptoms. Some ERMs, however, do get worse and will cause blurring and vision disturbances. The only time a doctor will suggest treatment is when there are vision symptoms. There is a diagnostic test called optical coherence tomography, or OCT. This uses light waves to scan and view the layers of the retina, and this test can help with the diagnosis of ERMs, OCT. An eye doctor may also use another test called a fluorescein angiography. This test involves the use of dye to light up areas of the retina. And the treatment for these ERMs, these epiretinal membranes, surgery aside, there are no other effective treatments for ERMs. Glasses or contacts and even prescription eye drops are not effective treatments. About 15% of these ERMs require surgery, and this is according to one report from the Indian Journal of Ophthalmology. Further, surgical intervention is successful in most cases, even though vision improvement for about 25 to 50% is at about 20 over 40. The 20 over 40 measurement is used to define visual accuracy, clarity, and sharpness. A 20 over 40 vision measurement means someone sees at 20 feet what a person with normal vision could see at 40 feet. Now we go on to the surgery procedure that would be able to cure these if it's needed. It's called a vitrectomy, and it's a surgical procedure. The surgery for ERMs is called a vitrectomy, V-I-T-R-E-C-T-O-M-Y, vitrectomy. During a vitrectomy, the surgeon will make tiny cuts in the affected eye and remove fluid from inside the eye. The surgeon will then hold and gently peel the epiretinal membrane from the retina and replace the fluid in the eye. Finally, the doctor places a pad and shield on the eye to protect it from infection or injury. That's vitrectomy, a surgical procedure to deal with these epiretinal membranes. There are some risks for this surgery, and this vitrectomy surgery is not without its risks. ERM surgery increases the risk for cataract, an eye disorder that causes clouding in the lens of the eye. In general, however, the risk associated with ERM surgery, that's the vitrectomy, is quite small. In fact, according to the American Society of Retinal Specialists, about 1 in 100 people develop a retinal detachment following the surgery, and 1 in almost 2,000 people develop a post-surgical infection. And about the recovery now, the recovery after ERM surgery. Following surgery, the person will be given eye drops to help stabilize the eye after the operation. The surgical staff will provide instructions as to how long a person should use the drops. Most vitrectomies are outpatient surgeries, and the person will not need to stay overnight in a hospital. However, you might have figured this out, you will need to have another adult driver with you to take you home after the surgery. Following a vitrectomy, a person may need to position their head a certain way for some part of the day, at least for a few days following the surgery. The surgeon will give instructions as to how to limit your activities to ensure a good recovery. Most people will notice an improvement in vision after surgery, but this may take up to 3 months for their vision to stabilize. In next section, can ERMs be prevented? There are no ways for someone to protect themselves from developing an epiretinal membrane. Sometimes an ERM results from another retinal disease, such as diabetic retinopathy, so managing an underlying condition, such as diabetes, can help prevent the ERM from developing in one or both eyes. The outlook, the prognosis for most people who develop an ERM is usually good. For many, decreased vision is minor and does not affect their quality of life or warrant treatment. For those who require surgery due to an advanced ERM, surgery is usually successful in improving vision, and complications associated with ERM surgery are rare. So once again, that's ERM, epiretinal membrane, and the website for the information that I brought to you today is medicalnewstoday.com. Well, I have a quote for you to end today's program. News is only the first rough draft of history. This was said by Alan Barth, a 20th century American journalist and author specializing in civil liberties. He is best known for his 30-year stint as an editorial writer at the Washington Post. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.